Hello and welcome. This is the Watson Weekend. I'm Rick Watson.
Hi, I am Jessica Lisewski. This week running on espresso, sarcasm, and the faint hope that Q4 will not break us. But it's a good start, you know?
Each week we pick through the retail rubble, AI, lingo, and sometimes CEOs doing vibe-based forecasting.
Vibe forecasting. Ooh, this is a new thing. Might be as fun as agentic commerce protocol.
Boom.
Yes. Retail therapy for the terminally online, business brains, barroom honesty, and caffeine-fueled chaos. Now with protein foam, cold foam, Rick, if you're getting it from Starbucks.
Oh,
protein. Just a little chaos for your morning commute.
Wow. I guess this is how you're going to recover from shutting down stores selling literally foam.
Pumpkin spiced cold foam. Boom. With protein. You got protein Doritos. Look, we're on a health kick, Rick. What is more healthy than protein fueled Doritos and pumpkin spice cold foam? Okay.
I can't think of a thing.
I know. So
maybe vegetables.
A little bit of fruit, you know? You don't even have to watch it. Just eat it up. So, all right. Who brings this fine program?
Crazy.
Yeah. Who brings us this fine program, Rick?
Yeah, Miracle is a proud sponsor of the program. We actually have a member from Miracle on the episode, along with one of their customers from Caddis Life on the Miracle Connect side. But its growth isn't just about speed, it's about direction. Miracle gives you the infrastructure to scale smarter, not just faster, with marketplace, retail media, dropship, and a seller platform powered by AI and built for what's next. So thank you, Miracle, for joining here. I actually ran into a number of the Miracle folks this week. If you see, like, wondering, what is that red sticker on your chest? That is actually the Lowe's red vest.
Yeah.
Is what they give for you, actually. After you complete some training on the floor, you get a customer service vest.
Okay.
They gave us.
Can you tell me which paint I should get, eggshell or flat?
I could not.
Okay.
You always get eggshell, I think, is the rule.
Okay.
All right. Unless it's flat. I just can't tell which. Anyway, I got a bucket.
Yeah,
I'm sure I could put something in the bucket. I'm told people put cappuccino in this bucket, but they should not.
Okay,
it's actually meant for, I think, just pens, which is actually a Lowe's Marketplace pen. So shout out to Michael McCluskey, Jared Luskin, and the entire Lowe's Marketplace team that I got to see this week. I got a reverse sit down with Michael from the interview we did a couple of months ago.
Nice.
Check it out in the show notes. He actually interviewed me on stage in front of 100 sellers in Charlotte, North Carolina last week. And I'm still recovering from a Bojangles coma.
Yeah, I know that Bojangles sweet tea, if you're not familiar, so I am in the South. Rick did not come see me. P.S. I'm a little bit perturbed by that. 3 hours away. Come on. Just a little train ride.
Sorry.
You're used to trains from where you live.
There's a train?
There is a train. You could have taken a train to come see me.
Okay.
No skin off your back. So anyways, I'll get over it. But yes, Bojangles sweet tea only comes in small, which is about this big, and medium, which is about this big. And then extra large, you actually need a carrier. You know, your Stanley carrier to get it around.
Small, large, and diabetico.
Yes, diabetico. Yeah. So Rick will regain feeling in his feet maybe the next few days.
It's there.
Yeah.
It's there.
All right. Well, we do have a really exciting program today. But before we dive in, we're going to hit the headlines and see if Rick can recover.
Oof. Well, before I can recover, I think you're up first.
Oh, am I up first?
Yeah, right. We're actually talking about Target this week, which is Weird Santa and Target Lady. I expect to see both of them this holiday season again. Target needs a blank. And just as a reminder, Jess has not seen these headlines. She's required to guess.
I was going to say, is it like a boost or a win or something? They got to have something. They need a boost.
They need a win. We'll give you that one.
Okay. I said win, boost or win.
I think we're going to give you at least 25% of that one.
Oh, Libby, come on. I think I deserve more than that.
It's a challenge. So look, Target has been on the struggle bus the last couple of years, so much so that they just replaced their CEO. The new CEO, incoming CEO, actually doesn't start until like Q1 of next year, Michael Fiddelke. He says, anyone who doubts Target, just watch us. So we're watching. We're waiting.
I'm watching and I want to
In the meantime, the consumers are, you know, maybe leaving. So our leading retail analyst, Catherine Black, said in Retail Dive that consumers are value-driven and emotionally fatigued. I think she means they're freaking tired. I mean, everyone is just exhausted, are we not?
We are tired. I'm tired. I mean, I am running off, like literally running off 3 espressos a day.
Yes, exactly. Cold foam can only get you so far.
Cold foam can, yeah. I mean, protein doesn't matter at this point. No. Just give me all the caffeine.
No.
Well, they also made a pretty big announcement about some layoffs that happened, right? It was around 1,800 jobs that were cut.
That's not even part of the story, but this is a newer story than this story even, that Target laid off 1,800 people.
Yeah.
And so clearly they need a win, but they're losing people. So we'll see what happens. 40% of people say they're switching retailers while they shop. Target is trying to do more collabs. Collabs are the hot thing with influencers and cool brands. I think in terms of those areas, Stranger Things is a thing. Why are they doing Stranger Things? I mean, I understand it's the last season, but it seems dead 2 seasons ago.
I thought the last season was like last season ago.
I could not understand. I don't remember any of the characters. One of these guys was like shaving. Like these are like supposed to be teenagers.
I live in the upside down right now. I don't need to watch the upside down. I'm in it.
Yeah.
I'm in it.
You go to the upside down, you're scared.
Yeah.
Christmas lights come on.
Whew.
What else do you need to say?
I know. All right. Well, we'll see what happens. You know, I do agree Target needs a win. We'll see if the holidays will give it to them. But before we, you know, go there, I've got a story for you, Rick. So we'll see if
all
you
right.
can.
All right. I can't wait.
This should be right up your alley because, you know, supply chain, tariffs,
so
it's
bad.
Kind of like your love language. But what shippers need to know about potential tariff what?
Potential tariff hikes?
Oh, no. Refunds, Rick.
Refunds.
Refunds. Oh. Yes. I can't even give you partial credit, and I would if I could.
I'm so bad.
So here's the thing. there is, you know, $150 billion that have been collected in tariffs this year, but the White House could be forced to hand a big chunk of it back if the Supreme Court rules this November if this tariff playbook was even legal. And when I say a little bit, it's $108 billion per PWC, not pocket change. That we're talking about here. So basically what's up in question is this use of the International Emergency Economic Powers Act. That is a mouthful. Didn't give him the right to slap tariffs on everything from the Canadian lumber to Chinese steel under the premise that we are fighting this fentanyl traffic issue, which is a real issue. Two lower courts said no. If the Supreme Court agrees, basically, we're going to be talking about the refund apocalypse of refund apocalypses. You know, what's really going to happen is if refunds have to go through the customs and border protection, I really need Jason Murray here. You're going to be flooded with planes, like 100 times larger than anything they've ever seen. So it's kind of like the IRS having to write a lot of Venmo transactions back and forth to the tune of like half the Fortune 500 in terms of dollars. So this is going to be a bit of a problem. You know, importers have to tweak filings, a lot of bureaucratic hair pulling. Are you getting a refund check in January? What do I put on my taxes? This is, all feels very confusing and discombobulating. But really the story here is we're talking about literally half the reversal of tariffs and the largest trade event, largest trade refund event in U.S. history.
Yeah, I'm selling this story, to be honest with you, because if I'm a CFO, I'm not like writing this in pencil.
Are you? Yeah.
In my line item for 2026 yet, expecting that this is going to come back. The administration likes suing over things, in case you hadn't noticed, which allows them to kick the can down the road over and over, potentially until the next administration even. And so I guess we'll see what happens after then. The fight could last that long. All I know is this. The government does not like giving money back once it has the money.
Right.
So that's a challenge. I just don't see it happening. The judge forced it. And who's going to enforce the money going back? Drum roll. The executive branch.
Yeah.
And so the executive branch isn't going to enforce the judge's ruling.
They've been because they're checks. The ones. They're cashing checks.
They're rolling, stacking fat.
Yeah.
Fat stacks of cash here.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I'm a little bearish on this idea.
Yeah. I don't disagree with you. yeah, but you know, we love a good headline and we love a good story. So
yes.
we'll see what happens and as the world turns of tariffs.
All right. Our next story is, I don't know, maybe I think this is probably huge in the Lasseski household, Jess and Brian.
I don't have girls, Rick.
Right.
It's
universal. Yeah. It's universal.
Yeah. Yeah.
K-pop Demon Hunters is a huge hit for Netflix. That's the story. So where are all the blank?
Huge hit for Netflix. So where are all the, and this is like a little bit of a long word. Where are all the, it's like merchandise or something, maybe. I don't know.
I have to be as quiet. Halloween costumes.
Yeah.
I think you were working your way in that direction, but I'm sorry. The time is up.
Oh, you're not even going to give it to me.
Meantime. So look, I think what we have here is ultimately a chicken and egg problem with regard to the success of these series, which is like, you don't know the series is going to be a success until it starts running, and you have to commit to inventory before the series run, which you don't know if it's going to be a success.
Right.
And so ultimately, you're in a situation where the series is a runaway success. Everyone's watching it over and over and over, memorizing all the songs. They want to play kids or, you know, moms, dads are scouring Facebook, paying retailers. Part of the article is like Spirit Halloween. Like, I will give you $50 if you call me if one of these shows up extra in advance of the merchandise. People are just laughing just because there's so many people trying to do the same thing.
Yeah.
Meantime, there's no inventory because no one knew it would be a runaway success. So Spirit Halloween, I'm sorry. I hate it for you this year. You probably could have sold a lot more.
That is sad news. I mean, but what happened to all of this, like, rapid manufacturing, print on demand?
Yeah.
3D where's she in at? Printing. I mean, I just feel, yeah, where's she in? Like, don't you feel like they could be printing money at this point?
Correct.
Come on. Like, this is what they were built for.
Right. Yeah, so we won't take this story too far. It is a licensed product. So the problem is, I think licensing interest was not that strong when the series went out. Although,
when did that ever stop Shein?
K-pop, Korean-based series have all crushed on Netflix. I mean,
yeah.
Yeah. So,
all right. Well, here's your chance for redemption.
Oh, jeez.
Amazon's next frontier in advertising, the blank it runs on.
Oof. The blank it runs on. The, is it the, technology?
You're running out of time.
Technology platform it runs on?
It's close. Cloud infrastructure.
Okay. All right. Yeah. That's something there.
Maybe I'll give you half. I'll give you a half because I'm not going to give you full because then you die. So, all right. Amazon's ad business, their new tagline, forget the ads, buy the pipes. The company just launched AWS RTB Fabric, which is a managed cloud network that handles lightning fast data chaos behind programmatic advertising. So this is the infrastructure that makes your web page load an ad for shoes before you've even finished thinking about buying them, or in your case, you know, a new red vest. So this was Amazon's quiet little side hustle. Some of the things that they're pitching, single digit millisecond latency, because two milliseconds is too slow for capitalism. Savings up to 80% cheaper than standard cloud rates. No one's really seen this math, but if Amazon says it's so, let it be so. And instant access. Ad tech partners connect to each other in hours instead of months. So it's like prime shipping, but for code.
I like it.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, I think it's a question, I can't say talk about AWS without the AWS debacle that happened also earlier this week. And lots of sites were down, lots of, you know, people just kind of hanging out, can't do their work. You know, Jira's messed up, all the other things that run on AWS. But it is interesting because Amazon's now opening up this highway, essentially, to help add traffic flow. And of course, they're going to charge you for it.
Yeah, Amazon, I think, is always into, once we need it for our own situation, can we sell the picks and shovels to other people so that we can amortize this big fixed costs of all the server infrastructure that we have? I mean, Amazon powers most of Netflix. Did Netflix go down this week? I didn't notice.
I don't know. I usually don't watch Netflix. Call me crazy, you know, during my working hours. But
correct. Yeah. So
that's
it's a challenge.
That's my third shift at night.
Exactly. But this ad infrastructure, I mean, by the way, I mean, riddle me this, Batman. Mm. Conversion rate is supposed to depend on fast speed, yet AI is slow as hell. I mean, how long do you wait for that ChatGPT query to return? It takes a while.
Brilliance, you can't rush brilliance, right?
This is true. Or gaslighting. Or
that's
gaslighting.
Right. I mean, I'm vibe forecasting, I'm vibe coding, I'm vibe living.
At this point, we're vibe hosting.
Vibe hosting, yeah. This isn't even me. This is my AI face.
I love it. I love it. I was wondering, I was going to ask you about your hair today.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to tell you a story about that later. But yeah. all right. Well, that's the headlines. Yet again, I have taken the crown.
Crushed. Am I going to win all week?
Crushed.
Tune in next week to find out.
Tune in next week. I mean, at this point, people might get tired. I might have to let you win, you know, just to mix it up a little bit. But
bring Nick back.
Yeah, here we go. So, let's kind of unpack what's going to happen over the next couple of minutes, Rick. Can you talk about the interview that we did? It was really amazing.
Yeah, this was a very, I think, fascinating and unexpectedly, but very nicely touching episode. We have two senior retail leaders on the program today. Emma Spagnuolo, who's the chief executive officer of Caddis Life. Essentially, mission described as eyewear. She has a 15 plus year background at apparel and fashion retailers like Tommy Hilfiger, North America. And she also spent time in McKinsey with our other guest, Sophie Marchesu, who is the head of the customer success team at Miracle, who's also one of our sponsors. So she's responsible for like the entire customer organization, ensuring that they have success. She joined before Miracle. She was at McKinsey with Emma at the same time. And so this was actually like a super interesting episode, and I would love for you to unpack some of it before we run into it.
Yeah. I mean, first of all, Emma is super impressive, and you're going to see and hear that and how she leads, how she approaches strategy, and the things that she's been able to achieve while she's at Caddis, let alone her career. The dynamic between her and Sophie was like super interesting. You do end up becoming besties with people that you work with. It's how Rick and I developed this amazing relationship that we have. But you know, you spend a lot of time with people that you work with, and you can tell how much they respect and care for each other. And we did get a little bit personal. You know, Emma has had her own battle with breast cancer. Breast cancer awareness is this month. Unpack that, right? And we talk about how that's, you know, changed and transformed the way that she approaches how she leads. And it was really touching. And so given we felt like this was an opportunity for us to give back and ask for your help. You know, we have so many amazing listeners. I have a personal story. I know Jackie, who is affiliated with our show, has a personal story. There's so many women and people who are impacted by breast cancer. My grandmother had it. You know, it's so tough. We would love for you to give back. We have started a campaign with Miracle. You can scan this QR code and donate. We're just trying to get to $1,000 that we can give back, and would love to have your help and support.
Yeah, we're actually over $1,000 by this point. We're actually hoping to get to $2,500. So we are well on our way to this goal. With your help, scan the QR code, click our link in the show notes, And all funds go directly to Memorial Sloan Kettering Breast Cancer Awareness. And so we are super excited and blessed to be able to support this cause.
Yeah.
And I think you'll see it come out on the podcast, the relationship between these two amazing women, as well as hopefully our organization, with the help of Miracle, can help support this cause too.
That's right. Yeah. So we're going to flash the code. And then we can get into the episode.
Awesome. Welcome. Jess and I are here with CEO of Caddis, Emma Spagnolo, and Chief Customer Officer of Miracle, Sophie Marchesu. Welcome both to the program.
Thanks. Happy to be here.
Yeah, I mean, Emma, you didn't start the company. You came in as CEO, and when we've had conversations before, you describe Caddis as mission described as eyewear. And when you took over, like, how did you see the company itself? Was it like more of a brand challenge, a cultural challenge, a retail challenge that you were looking to solve?
Yeah, no, it's a great question, Rick. What drew me into Caddis was the fact that it had such a strong and amazing brand and was pretty much at the forefront of culture. Our founder, Tim Parr, has this ability to kind of create magic and speak to consumers. And that's what I'm super passionate about. And, you know, when I look at myself, I feel like I have the skills from a business perspective, a commercial perspective. But that magic is something that I'm always looking for and looking for a good partner in. And he had that and the brand had it. So when I came in, actually, I felt like the brand was super strong and it was more, okay, how do we get the foundation and the bones, you know, working in the right way, getting all the cogs turning in the right way in order to make it a strategically and financially successful company too? Because it's definitely got the potential and all of those pieces that you can't really make are there for it, which was so awesome.
Yeah. And, you know, what with Caddis selling eyewear, a lot of brands just sell glasses and it's almost like this symbol of, oh, you know, the old I'm over the hill or yep, getting old, got to break out my reading glasses. You know, so how do you guys kind of differentiate it a bit? Can you talk about that and what sets you apart?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you know, as Tim would say, like every good brand has a why.
Yes.
And, you know, Tim's founding story essentially is him standing in a CVS. He's got a picture of this. And the sign that dictates, you know, what's in that aisle says readers, laxatives, and depends.
Perf.
So, you know, he felt like, I'm 50 years old.
Yeah.
Why am I putting something on my face that is making me feel, you know, just like I'm giving up and I'm throwing the towel in?
Yeah. You
know, he's got this design background and he's like, I want to make readers that I want to wear, that are exciting to wear. And I think, you know, what we're really going after, we call ourselves the anti-aging brand, because as you get older, Tim has created a product that you almost get to wear in a way, right? It's like,
yeah, you want to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the customer base that we've built. The same way that people, you know, collect purses or shoes because they want to be able to switch it up for whatever outfit they're wearing. We have people who have bought upwards of 30 pairs of glasses because there's so many different styles and colors that you can choose from. And then you don't feel bad about wearing them. You're not hiding it when you have to go to a restaurant and look at a menu.
Well, it's an accessory now, right?
Exactly.
This is a chance to portray your personality and you might be feeling more serious or regal one day and you might want to have a little fun another day,
exactly.
You know? So I love that. And I just I need to know, was this before or after all of the laxatives and depends were locked up in CVS?
I don't know the answer to that one, but yes, good question.
yeah. And, you know, something else you've said, I think is, like the worst you can do is nothing. Can you tell us about, you know, how you brought that energy into the brand and what were the opportunities that you saw? You said solid brand, had this great, you know, rich history, amazing design. What was the thing that you felt like I've got to harness this and this is going to be my first 90 days order of business?
Yeah, it's a great question. That definitely has been my philosophy ever since my McKinsey days. Mm-hmm. You know, if you do nothing, you can just like you slowly die. And it's a mantra for me, not only for business, but for life as well. When I first got into Caddis, you know, there was a little bit of fear around distribution, I would say. So we were historically a pure DTC brand selling through our website. And there was, I don't want to say that they didn't want to expand. I think the ambition was there. It was just concern over how are we going to do it? And is it going to cost money? And what is it going to look like? And so when I came in, I really made the push of, okay, we need to evaluate all of the different options in front of us. Obviously, marketplaces being one of them. And we need to, kind of putting my McKinsey hat on, think about, okay, what is going to be the cost of this? How do we need to get it done? What is going to be, you know, the reward for doing that and the risk. And then we have to make a decision and move with it. When I've seen things not work out, whether it be in my consulting career or in my retail career, a lot of times it's because you have a plan and then you allow yourself to get distracted from or derail the plan in the midst of it. There's always going to be a time when you get new information and you have to pivot. That I'm not saying you should do. 100% you should do that.
Yeah.
Right. It's
kind of like, you know, losing energy or losing focus is something that kills brands when they're trying to, you know, make decisions and move forward. So we opened up our next set of retail experiences. We started in August. We opened up 4 locations across the country. We had one in California, one in Westchester, New York, one in Miami, and one in Philadelphia. And it took us less than 6 months to get those open because the risk financially was easier to take on because we had partners, like we had IEM who was helping us set that up with Simon. But at the same time, we knew that we could test multiple locations and kind of make decisions from that. And we're in that phase now. Mm-hmm. Now we're evaluating everything and for sure things will change. We didn't do some things right. Some things are great, right? So now it's like we take in that information and make a new set of decisions and have to move with that.
Yeah, I mean, it's so interesting. I would love to use this opportunity to bring Sophie into the conversation, because as you were figuring out where does Caddis need to go, how do I evolve this from a simple DTC brand to something more interesting and substantial, Miracle got brought into the equation. So I would love to ask Sophie, like from the other side of the table almost, like, how did you meet Emma and what were those initial conversations like?
So full disclosure, Em and I were actually partners together at McKinsey, helping brands figure out how to grow, how to be true to their DNA, how to pick the right growth opportunities and execute well. So we have a long history together, and I'm personally thrilled to be with her on a podcast again.
I love that.
Likewise.
I've kind of been, you know, following what she's done, but so I work for Miracle, and it's software that serves brands and retailers to grow their marketplace business. And an interesting trend is that we've seen more and more brands, including premium brands, expand into marketplaces in the past few years. So it was kind of a natural discussion that happened over time, maybe a couple of glasses of wine as well with Emma on how they could
for
Caddis. So that's kind of how we reconvened on the topic.
I love that. You guys had a full circle moment of coming back together. And part of where I think that fear, you talk about that fear, Emma, of distribution, and you don't want to lose that relationship with customers. You don't want to lose that brand connection or visibility. So Sophie, as you were chatting about the strategy, I think the beauty of Miracle is all of the different marketplaces and retailers that you hook into. How did you guys come to that decision together?
Yeah, I think it's not about either investing in your own retail or own e-com or going marketplaces. I really think it matters to do both. And one thing I want to clarify is I think especially in the US and in premium lifestyle categories, there's a pretty negative association with the word marketplace. You say marketplace, you think cheap prices, endless aisle, buy box with multiple products, similar products. Yes. Kind of the brand's worst nightmare and as an experience. But marketplace, that's a very broad world. It's about 2/3 of the volume of e-commerce. And so you have very mass players, and you also have ultra curated marketplaces. And so I think it's a lot about choosing the right partner and making sure that as a brand, you choose one that aligned with your DNA and how you want to portray your brands. And I think in Emma's case, it made more sense to go with platforms that are selective about the brands they allow in. And also those platforms, those marketplaces are more demanding with the brands they work with on brand quality. But if you do choose the right one, it makes a ton of sense for the brand. And the way I see it is it's a way to get in front of more customers. It's a little bit as if Emma all of a sudden was able to open 100 more store location than she had in the past few months, digital stores, but without having to invest in the real estate and finding the lease and all of that. But you bring more eyeballs to the brand while retaining more control, because Emma, when she sells on marketplaces, she is responsible and so gets to choose the price of her glasses, the imagery, the product description, but also the after sales experience, like returns, all of that. So it's, I think it's a very compelling way for brands to put themselves out there. And you also have increasingly more retailers that want to push a lot of their assortment to marketplaces, because for them, it's a way to experiment more with brands as well, and maybe take more risks on how broad they go with the SKUs or the brands they work with.
Yeah. And Emma, did you have a strategy where you felt like there was retail, or there were some of your product and merchandise you would carve off and still hold true for your own .com, some you were putting into marketplaces? How did you guys approach that merchandising strategy?
You know, it's that's always kind of the key thing to consider when you're going into any type of new distribution.
Yeah.
And I always try to think of it through the lens of the consumer. Mm-hmm. The reason that we love, to Sophie's point, the reason that we love the idea of marketplaces, and honestly, that was maybe the easiest decision that we made when I came in, is because it does open the door to all of these new consumers who are looking for your product. So I don't want to limit those consumers who are finding us for the first time to kind of like product that I consider, I mean, we like to say that we don't sell any C product, but product is not our best, product.
Could be niche, more niche styles or something. Yeah.
Now, there is a world where if we did a collaboration or something to that effect, we might not be able to tell the full story, right?
Yeah.
So that might be something that stays on our website because we're dedicating a full page to that, or, you know, we have a lot of additional content for it that we can't put onto our partner, marketplaces. But for the most part, no, we want to let the consumer select what they're finding. And the interesting thing that we saw was when we actually launched on one of our first marketplaces, Nordstrom, we put everything up and there were products that are not our top styles on our site popping to the top. And so you start to realize like you're getting a new and different consumer with a fresh set of eyes. And I don't want to limit that, I want to see the full breadth of that. So no, we really approach it with a kind of, especially for the ones that Sophie mentioned that have the, that are very specific, have the exact setup, we try to give them the best that we have and offer up all of it and let the consumer decide.
And is that something that you think a lot of brands find, Sophie, when they come onto marketplaces that they're surprised by? It's just like the assortment mix that the consumer is viewing and the sell-through is different compared to their their D2C website?
I would say it's pretty common, actually. And in a way, if you don't get surprised by when you sell on marketplace, it's that you probably didn't experiment enough. You weren't broad enough. You didn't expose, like Emma described, enough of your assortment. Because this is really a big purpose of the marketplace, is being able to meet new consumers. So you just get more information, intelligence on what different types of consumers like. It can be like different demographics. Sometimes you also do better in a new geography, like a subset of the US maybe that you weren't as strong in. So I would say brands that really embrace the full benefit of marketplaces and put themselves out there and then learn. And then you can learn and decide to pull things back and say, no, actually, you know, I've learned and this is how on this marketplace I want to focus my assortment. But I think it's really important to give it a real chance to be surprised and get learnings. So I've heard similar stories to Emma's from other brands for sure.
Yeah, that's great. And I feel like people miss that opportunity when they go to marketplaces if they aren't putting out the right assortment. Being on both, I've been on the retailer side and the marketplace side, there is that halo effect because people have discovered your brand. They found you. And we would find like, hey, we'd get 20% new shoppers organically just coming over to our site because they had not heard of us before and they were discovering a whole new world. So I hope this is a lesson learned that for brands, I mean, you guys are really smart, Emma, to embrace it like you did, because a lot of times there are the stories of like small assortment. Let's start with like, we don't want to give up our best styles. We don't want to, you know, feel like we're giving away our secret sauce. And it feels like you guys really approached it in partnership with Miracle and Sophie in like the right way.
Thank you. Yeah, it felt good. And it has paid off so far. The partnership with Miracle has been great.
Yeah, I would love to unpack a little bit more about how you're building the brand, because you're in an interesting demographic here. You know, if you kind of go back to Nike's original founding message, everyone is an athlete, just do it, kind of came along. Now, you know, as someone who's getting older myself, it's almost like just be comfortable is the becomes the motto.
Like you're in your prime. I don't know what you're talking about. You're getting older. You're entering the prime years.
And I don't want to buy those readers. For sure I can wait another year to get them. I definitely don't need bifocals or like, you know, different lengths, because that's for sure for older, my mom or my dad has those things. How do you think about this sort of category of consumer and category of retail that seems still underserved? Because you hear about everyone like America's aging, and I think everyone knows like that category, but the category sort of right before that category is sort of what we're talking about here.
Yeah, 1000%. And I think Jess nailed it, right? Like Rick, like you're in your prime, and why, you know, people sacrifice things because they don't want to do something that has this stigma of getting older. You sacrifice being able to do what you love, you know, and that's our core, the core people that we serve are people who are artists, musicians, gardeners, like working with their hands, needing hand-eye coordination. And if they don't have, you know, proper vision, they can't do what they love anymore. And it doesn't have to have that stigma. So that's exactly where we come in. And I think you also hit the nail on the head, Rick, with the idea that it's underserved. I mean, all of the brands that I have worked with, you know, across my many years have been basically targeting a younger consumer. That's like the gold standard, whether it's 15 to 25 or like 20 to 35, that's what they want. And look at the celebrities and the influencers who are still killing it every single day.
Yeah.
They are in their 50s, 60s, and 70s, and they are still amazing and in their prime and crushing it. So like it doesn't, we have this disconnect today where we're focusing, you know, kind of 4/5 of all of our marketing dollars on this younger consumer in this hyper competitive space with all of the content that's flowing at them, when we have this huge group of people who are totally underserved from a product perspective, from a marketing perspective, and they have the majority of the money.
Like, they
have made money in their lives and are established. And so they're also more loyal. And Sophie and I did a lot of work to understand kind of generational differences. But, you know, they have this stickiness to them. And if they find a brand that they love and trust, they're going to stay with it. And so, that we believe that this group of people, I mean, it's not time to just give up and say, okay, I guess I'm going to die in 50 years. Like, that's not the way to live, you know? So that's exactly what we're going after.
I mean, if you have a customer that's buying 30 pairs of glasses, this is as good as it gets as a brand.
No, it is. I mean, It feels like a lot of people have to go out and like, they're always after that next customer. And it feels like you have so much opportunity to really sell and activate that base. And because it is one of those fashion accessory items, just like you'd, you know, accessorize with a belt or, you know, some earrings and jewelry, like you want to accessorize with glasses and your eyewear. And I think it's just really smart. You know, I love one of these quotes you said, it's age has nothing to do with who you are. Or what you like to do. And I think that's really the brand energy you guys embody. So it's just really smart. And, you know, I think that it feels like you've really built this new lifestyle category. Where else do you feel like it could go?
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, we've expanded beyond readers into, we have sunglasses. And what's important about the sunglasses is we partnered with Zeiss. They have a Light Pro lens technology that actually allows more light into the glasses. So it's partially polarized. So it is reducing a lot of the glare. But as you age, your eyes need more light, even when you're trying to block out the sun. So if it's too dark, it's really challenging. So this is like, we're able to deliver, you know, the same style, the same or better quality than some of our competitors, but with technology that's actually beneficial for the consumers in the age group that we're targeting. We also offer prescription glasses, same reason, right? Like as you get older, like you said, it's like you end up needing a prescription with, you know, progressives, whatever that might be, and we want to serve that. And then finally, we are actually moving into additional accessories because we do believe that this is a mindset and a lifestyle that people can go after. And if you are part of the 10% of the population who don't require readers after the age of 40 or 42, then we want you to be able to participate as well. So that's actually launching for us in November. And it's all about celebrating, you know, being at this age and what that means, whether you're empty nesting or you never had kids and you're in your prime in your career, like whatever that looks like, that's what we want you to celebrate.
Yeah. It's like blue light glasses, things like that too.
Yeah, for sure. We have blue light glasses. Yeah. Especially because, you know, all of us spend so much time on our computers these days.
Way too much.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. And that also wears on you, not only as you age, also when you're younger. So it's super helpful. You know, if anybody else like doom scrolls on their phone uncontrollably, like I sometimes do, these can definitely help as well.
Yeah, my husband calls my laptop my binky at this point. It's the whole thing. So I'd love to get personal if you don't mind, Emma. You know, it is Breast Cancer Awareness Month, and you have had your own personal journey, which I think just speaks to your resilience. Do you mind sharing about that and how that's impacted your leadership style?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, so I am a stage 3 breast cancer survivor. I was diagnosed in 2019, and actually, given she's on the phone, I have to give Sophie a lot of props for this because I was working very closely with Sophie at the time, and she really helped me get through this. Actually, Sophie, funny story, was the first person to know I was also pregnant with my second child.
Oh, wow.
And about 9 months before I was diagnosed. So,
oh my gosh, wow.
Yeah. So this is definitely an important cause for me. And it's impacted my leadership style because one of the things that, you know, a lot of cancer survivors talk about is it teaches you to be who you want to be and to be yourself and almost unapologetically.
Yeah.
And I stopped questioning, you know, what does so-and-so think about, you know, how I'm handling this? Or does this person think I am being successful? Like, I want to lead with humanity and compassion and collaboration and fairness. Like that is, if I were to die tomorrow, which anybody who's gone through a cancer diagnosis, that you live with that possibility, right? I want to know that I lived the way, treating people the way that I want to treat them. And so that is how I've really, you know, I wouldn't say it changed my leadership style. I always felt that way. It's I no longer fret about, does so-and-so think that I should, you know, exit this person? Or does so-and-so think that I'm not performing and I need to like beat up my team in order to get them to perform better? I don't, that's not what this is about. I'm selling glasses, right? In the future, in, you know, with what we're launching, hopefully I'll be selling accessories and maybe even apparel one day with Caddis, right? But like, it's a fun thing to do and we should be having fun doing it, working hard, of course, but gosh, life is way too short to be sitting right. yelling at people because they didn't sell enough pair of, you know, blue light.
I love that. And I think when people have this perspective, like that as a CEO, you've got to be tough and you got to drive hard and you have to be the person in the room that is, it's not always the bully per se, but the person that is like driving the command and it feels like you really lead with care and you're a hard charger clearly because you guys wouldn't have the success you have if you weren't. But I love that balance of like, we're all at the end of the day, just trying to do the right thing.
Right.
Yeah. It's how you do it. It's not, yeah, of course we still have to make the right decisions. We still have to make tough decisions, but I trust that, you know, I've done the research. My team has done the research. I trust that I have the right team. And if I don't, I do make the hard decisions. Sure. It's not about that. It's about how you go about doing that. I mm-hmm. can either have a conversation with somebody about, you know, the way that we need to change how we're working or the results that we need to see. And I can help them think through how to get there. Or I can sit in a room and I can just yell at somebody and tell them they're not performing.
Right.
No, it's not. Right. It's one. I'm going to tell you right now, one of them has a better outcome than the other. And it's not the one that most yeah. people think.
100%.
And also, I think that kind of authenticity really bleeds through, not just in what you had already been talking about for the brand, but your employees reflect the brand in their work.
Yeah. Sophie, how did you help Emma through that? Just kind of going back to that experience, I just love to kind of hear. Sounds like your friendship is clearly yeah. amazing, but you know, what's that? What was that like for you?
It's actually bringing back like emotional memories for me too, Emma. Like I'm getting a little teary on the podcast, which I hadn't planned on. I actually vividly remember when Emma, we were on the project together and, you know, it's always like an intense, easy pace and, going after short deadlines that you want to meet. And I vividly remember it was in a McKinsey New York office that Emma was like, I have to go. I think there's something off. I have to get tested. I believe it was a Monday afternoon. And it really stuck with me. And she left and then it was basically gone for, I don't know how many months. And I was obviously in close touch with her and I was kind of the point person. You won't be surprised to hear this, but Emma had a strong followership of both very senior people at McKinsey. She was like one of the fastest person to ever make partner. And then also younger folks that she was mentoring and had worked with. Uh-huh. And so was kind of the point person that was giving regular health updates. So Emma would share and then I would just share back. And I still remember, you know, one day she said, okay, I can take the updates on now. I'm like getting back on the positive path. And yeah, I was super relieved. And, you know, listening again to this story, Emma, I'm so grateful that you've been through it with a great outcome and that we've been able to also like cross back our path.
That's
very lucky. And I think I don't take it for granted as much as I used to, like friendship, great colleagues. Those things are special.
They are. You have magic. I feel like when you find someone that you really click with and, you know, like Emma said, life is way too short and we spend a lot of our time at work.
Yes.
So having people around you is makes a huge difference.
Totally. Could not agree more.
Hard to go back to marketplaces after that.
I know, right? I think it's interesting in this journey. Like I totally agree with you, sir, Sophie. I think we need to get into AI for a little bit because I think how do we evolve the brand in this changing time we're in? I would love to talk about how Sophie feels that's affecting marketplaces and brands mm-hmm. that are interacting with those channels. I think that would be a good place to sort of jump off from here.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's having a huge impact, as you can imagine. I think from two different levels. One is one of the hardest things for brands that work on marketplace is the quality of the catalog data. It's mm-hmm. always a challenge. And the reason is it's a challenge is because every retailer out there wants a slightly different product title, image, like background color, image specs and size, how many characters the product description can be. And the idea of marketplace is that you can constantly test new styles that you want to put out there. But basically, it's hard because every single marketplace is going to say, well, no, especially the curated one, please adapt the product titles, or your catalog data, etc. But it's super critical to do right because in the end, this is how the brand presents itself as well. Mm. So when you go to one of Emma's stores, like one of Kata's stores, you have the staff, you have the merchandise, and like, things aren't moving as fast. But when you're online, you only get, you know, short attention span of a consumer that's browsing. So it's actually super critical to have the right information. So for a year, there's been a lot of time put in by both the marketplaces and the brands to go back and forth on this catalog data. So the amazing thing is that AI helps tremendously there. And so at Miracle, we've put a lot of development and like product innovation time into helping brands and retailers, marketplaces, fix this. So we have this cool tool called Catalog Transformer. And basically, it uses AI to shorten that time, that back and forth massively by automatically updating what can be updated, etc. Mm-hmm. Of course, there's always the brand can always validate things, change things, because it's very important that the brand retains control. But a lot of the groundwork can be accelerated through AI. So I'd say that's one major disruption, which is super positive. The second one, which is still in very early stages, is everything around agentic commerce. So imagine today you can go on ChatGPT or Perplexity and you can chat about, hey, for the first time, I'm hitting 50. I feel like I'm reading glasses. Like, how should I go about buying this? Right now you'll be in a conversation, but we're in the early days of you're also able to shop on that channel. Yeah. So that's going to be a massive disruption because it's basically a new channel where you better get represented well as a brand or as a marketplace or as a retailer to be able to show up and capture that moment where the consumer is pretty inclined to buy, got through information gathering, and now that he or she is just like ready to make that purchase. But to do that well, that means that you have to also have the right data infrastructure to show up and all the details that are needed to show up on that query or on that search. So that's a huge one. And so you hear talk about GEO readiness. So it's generative engine optimization, a bit like the next generation of SEO. Because if you don't show up in the results, it really matters. And then there's tons of open questions still on what does the after sale experience looks like? Because for this, it's important to not just show up, but also handle returns, customer support. There's still a lot of open questions, but I would say AI, that's the two disruption, like the agentic commerce and then your easier catalog transformation.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's an interesting question because these LLMs are wanting a lot of different kinds of information. There's the catalog side where I think that's something that Miracle can readily get. And then there's the other brand side, which is like, what is the consumer looking for? Why are they looking for it? What conversations may they have had with customer service? How could you create feeds of that kind of information to feed into these things? How do you see these areas change how consumers shop? Because I it definitely is. I mean, as a research, even if you don't believe people are going to buy there and not buy on Amazon or in retail, as a research tool, it's undeniable.
No, it is. And so I think we will definitely get to transactions happening through agents directly on the platform. Now, the question is a bit the behind the scene. You know, it sounds easy, but how do you make sure that you have the right, the latest product inventory information, the right price, product doesn't arrive, it's easy for the consumer to figure out where their product is. I mean, in a way, the after sales is the much more difficult piece than just showing the product and being able to click and pay.
Totally.
And so you hear those words of merchant of record, which as Miracle, we're deeply familiar with. It's essentially like, who's responsible for like all the experience end to end? And this is where I think brands or retailers will still play a massive role because they're the specialist. So I think we are heading to a significant amount of online transactions happening on those LLMs. But the behind the scene, there needs to be a harmonization of or definition of what that shopping experience needs to look like. What are the standards? And I believe there's still a very big role for brands and retailers to play.
No, it makes sense. And Emma, what have you noticed with consumer behavior, whether it's traffic on the site or conversations that your customers are having with your in stores or in reps regarding, hey, I found this on my phone or that kind of thing?
Yeah, I mean, especially because we were, you know, born as part of kind of the DTC boom. We get that all the time. People come in showing us ads that they've seen or, you know, pictures that they've found in other places. And, it, you know, it's common and something that, to Sophie's point, is only going to kind of proliferate more. And I think what you have to realize is all of these are tools that add convenience to the consumer. They make it easier. And anytime you make something easier for a consumer, they are 100% going to adopt it. Unless you put a crazy paywall, right? To adopt it. So it's not going to be the only thing that they use, right? The same way that mobile was a huge like unlock and disruption for everybody, it's still just one tool that people use as they shop in all different ways. And so you have to consider like agentic commerce and where that's going as like one tool that you can use as a brand to connect with your consumers. Mm. So when they do come in and they are seeing things, like what I expect to see probably a little bit more too is, you know, they're being served up other brands, other products, and they're coming to us and saying, hey, I love your quality. I love your product, but, you know, they kind of nailed it for me on this one. Like, what do you have right. that's similar, right?
Right.
To react to that. And, you know, the thing that always helps you stand apart, no matter what the disruption is, you saw it with the move to online sales, you saw it with mobile, like it's having a true brand. You saw it with like the rise of Amazon, having a brand that people like resonates with people and that they feel emotionally connected to. That is how you then turn all of these things into tools and not competition. The second you start viewing anything like competition, you're going to get into this crazy kind of price war and make decisions that don't really make sense to drive the next dollar. You have to invest in your brand. And then it's just like with Miracle. I don't fear Miracle Marketplace taking from me. It's not like that. It's about building the pie more. Miracle Marketplace has helped us reach like hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of new consumers. And that it's mutually beneficial. So that's kind of how we, you know, take these things. And I think the thing that keeps me up at night is making sure that we have the technological capacity or the partner in order to take advantage of it. But it in and of itself doesn't keep me up at night.
No, I mean, this seems like a good place to wrap it. I mean, in this hyper tech age, having a brand that has soul, that has purpose, that really speaks to who you are as a person, Emma, who Caddis is as a brand. And I mean, frankly, I think as we've discovered in this podcast, there's just like deep friendship between the two of you. So I would love to, you know, have Sophie say any final takeaway for the listeners on retaining your brand soul in this journey. Because I think as you led off with, Sophie, Amazon, Walmart, you know, it's the typical expectation idea of a marketplace. Emma came at it from a different direction. Is there any advice for other brands that might be thinking about a similar decision?
In a way, I think it's a bit like dating. Like you have to know what you stand for, your own value system, and who you want to partner with. And I think that's true for like in the case of marketplaces, the marketplaces you want to sell into because you know which ones tend to put the brands forward.
Yeah.
And you kind of have a good partnership with because they'll share with you insights, you'll share insights back. You know, maybe one of the marketplaces is telling Emma, hey, you're underpenetrated with this demographic. But on the other hand, we learned that we actually can do well with this demographic thanks mm-hmm. to your glasses. So this constant exchange of ideas with partners that you trust, I think make a huge difference. I think it's the same thing for the software tools that you use. You have to trust them. And also in the age of AI, I think there is one key criteria, which is how quick are they able and agile are they able to move? Because this world is changing so much. You know, there's question of, can services ever show up on LLM conversations? I mean, there's so many open questions. So you have to have partners that are very agile in helping you figure out how the world is moving. How do you quickly integrate new features? So it's not a static world we live in. But personally, I think it's actually a very exciting transformation to be part of. But it's about being well surrounded with partners you trust.
That's great. I mean, I think the idea of partnership is probably a good place for us to wrap this up. This has been a fascinating conversation and, you know, I think very meaningful to everyone here. Hopefully everyone got out of it. And, you know, from Jess and I, just wanted to thank you, Emma and Sophia for being on the show.
Yeah, thank you so much. I've learned a ton and it's so exciting to see what you guys are doing together and individually. I mean, Miracle, I feel like I hear so many things, like on a weekly basis, like Miracle's doing this. So you guys are on the move. And Emma, congrats again on all the success. Can't wait to see where else Caddis is going. Thank you. We'll definitely be following your story.
Thanks so much. And thanks for this opportunity. This was great.
Thank you both.
Thanks a lot, guys.
Great. See you.
That's going to do it for this week's Watson Weekend. If you've made it this far, you're either a retail masochist or you just love the sound of our voices.
I'm going to say it's option two. Either way, we appreciate you. If you've enjoyed today's show, give us a follow, give us a like wherever you're listening. Leave us a review, preferably with 5 stars. We'll take 4.5 if you're feeling a little bit stingy. Yeah, it's okay.
And don't just lurk on the channel. Share this with a friend, colleague.
That's right. That's right. We're kind of like your little sidekick, helping you bring everybody along in your organization. You can find us on LinkedIn, your Spotify, all the places, and all the links are in the show notes too.
Big thanks to the community, our listeners, as well as the Kaplan Snacks that keep this circus running. Sponsors, you know who you are. And if you're not a sponsor yet,
I mean, what are you actually doing with your marketing budget? Give us a ring, call us, send an email. Rick loves when people slide into his DM. It's his favorite place.
Until next time, I'm Rick Watson.
And I'm Jessica Lisewski. Thanks for spending part of your day with us. Now, you can feel like you can go on and do something better with your life. We'll see you next week.
Bye.